Good morning. This is Karen Testerman with We Hold These Truths on WSMN 1590, Nashua's source for news and talk. Welcome to a very rainy day again today. It was a beautiful weekend yesterday. We couldn't have asked for a more gorgeous weather for the Run for the Fallen, in which we honor and recognize our families who have lost a loved one in some conflict that we have been involved in. And in studio today, I have the pleasure of having Catherine Albrecht with us. Catherine has her own show and is known for her work on privacy. And also in studio, we have Kate Lucco. Lecco. Hi, Kate.
Good morning.
Oh, well, Kate is here from Stay, Work, and Play, and she's got a very, very special event she wants to talk about.
Yes, so, thanks for having me.
Sure.
So 3 weeks from today, on October 7th, we have our annual Rising Stars Awards. This is the fourth year, and not only do we recognize the winners of we have five awards, College Student of the Year, Young Professional of the Year, Coolest Companies for Young Professionals, Civic Leader of the Year, and a Leadership Development Program of the Year. One of the Young Professionals of the Year is actually from Nashua, one of the finalists. So in addition to announcing those award winners, we have it's a red carpet event. We have Amy LaBelle from LaBelle Winery, so a local young entrepreneur, coming as our keynote speaker. We have a silent auction. We have a live big band, plenty of networking. We have lots of people that have already registered, so it's going to be a stellar event. So you can go on our website. It's stayworkplay.org/risingstars with the S awards to get all the details.
Oh, great. Now, Kate, tell us what Stay, Work, Play is about.
Sure. So we are a nonprofit, a 501c3, focused on keeping 20 and 30-somethings in New Hampshire.
Okay.
So staying, working, and playing here.
Okay. And so how do you do that exactly?
So a lot of it is really a promotional effort. So uh-huh. To talk about jobs that are available, internships, fun things to do, news, trying to encourage our young people to see all the great things that there are in New Hampshire.
Oh, good. Good. Well, thanks for coming in, and
thanks
for telling us about your event. And again, it is Stay, Work, Play, and it is
the Rising Stars.
The Rising Stars Awards, and it will be on what day?
October 7th.
October 7th. So if anybody wants any more information, they go to
stayworkplay.org.
And where's the event going to be held?
It's at the Pandora Mill. We were actually talking earlier about the revitalization of the mills in Manchester. So
yes.
It's at the Pandora Mill in Manchester.
Well, I'm all for the mills in Manchester. It's got a special place in my heart now. So very good.
Yes.
All right.
Thank
you. Kate, thank you for coming in and sharing that information with us.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. And also in studio, we have Dr. Catherine Albrecht. And we've got a lot to talk about. There's so much going on. It's just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, you know, I've been working on privacy since 1999, and it feels like the first, the first 12, 13 years of that was just yelling into the wind and not being heard. And I think now with what happened with Ed Snowden, with all the NSA revelations, and we keep getting one after another. It's like every time I open up the news or I open up the paper or I click up a website, there is something new going on that's been revealed. So I think we're finally at a tipping point in this country where people are becoming aware of how their privacy is under attack. And I think they're now finally ready to sit up and start taking notice and doing something about it.
Right. And it is so completely invasive. I used to laugh all the time because my husband was in the military, and being in the military, you always had to have your ID card, and then they were starting to put more information on the back. And at one point I finally said, you know what? They know everything about me. They're always going to know everything about me. So there's nothing I can do about it. But then, now we have Common Core. And when you look at Common Core, which is the new, quote, voluntary, quote, and I say quote because it is not voluntary. It has been coerced. School districts and state boards of education have been coerced into this program that is really a national curriculum setting program, even though it's denied that that is at all what's going on. We know differently, and we're not stupid. That's the thing I keep trying to look at this and saying, why do they keep saying this to us? Do they think we don't read, that we are incapable of thinking on our own? Well, maybe because we're from a prior generation that was allowed to think. But they are collecting now through Common Core. They plan to collect 400 points of information on all the students. And you think that's not possible? Well, they're, what is it, $15 billion that they're spending on retraining teachers and buying the equipment, which is the computers on which every child will take their tests.
Yeah, you know, Karen, the schools are really a target point, and I think in order to understand why that is and how that works, you have to really think about the world from the position of the people in power, that they recognize that you and me and most of the people listening to this broadcast hear about what Ed Snowden revealed in the NSA scandals, and they get upset, and they say, we don't want you listening to our phone calls or making records or reading our email. If you want to change that, if you don't want a backlash from the public, then you have to raise up a generation that will say, oh, well, of course you're reading my email. Well, of course you would be listening to all of my phone calls. How would it be any different? And if you want to do that, given that the vast majority of young people, the next generation, are currently in government schools, then you take control of the government schools. Now, Hitler understood this brilliantly. Mm-hmm. And in fact, some of the things that came out of the Nuremberg trials, there was one phrase that really struck me from that testimony where Hitler had said to people who were opposing his rule, I don't care about you. You're, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60. You don't matter. Your children matter, and I already own them. Mm-hmm. So this notion that, okay, fine, so everybody 30 and up is opposed to data collection. As long as I have everybody 30 and under, all I got to do is wait 20, 30 years, and voila, I own this country. So I think really that's one of the reasons why you're seeing a lot of this stuff targeting young people. And it's not just Common Core and curriculum development, but it extends all the way into physical tracking of students. Teaching students and young people that they have no right to any form of privacy, that their backpacks can be rifled through, that their lockers can be gone through, that their desks can be gone through, that they can be stopped in the hallway and physically frisked and searched at any time. And when you add it all up, and I've actually got a doctorate in education from Harvard University, so I've spent a lot of time thinking about the educational system. When you add it up, the average American spends 14,000 hours of seat time, 14,000 hours sitting in a government institution, which really is what a school is, being trained to ask an authority figure for permission to even do basic things like eat or exercise their own bodily functions, get a glass of water, go to the bathroom. And after 14,000 hours of raising your hand to go to the bathroom or get a drink, I'll tell you, when the TSA says, hey, we want you to step into the naked icing machine, or they say, hey, we want you to give us access to all your email, most people say, yes, sir.
Exactly, exactly. And very few people question what's going on. And one of the things that you brought up, I think, was the amount of information that can be stored on a pencil eraser. Is that what the size was? I couldn't remember what the size of the item was that it could, but
we're talking DNA storage now. This starts getting absolutely just science fiction-y nowadays, but researchers out of Harvard have actually now demonstrated that it is possible to store, I believe it is 7 libraries of Congress into an area the size of a pencil eraser.
Right. You were talking about 3 terabytes, I think, is the number that stuck in my mind, and I'm going, holy cow.
Yeah, and a terabyte, the word tera actually comes from the Greek, and it means monster. So this is a monstrously huge amount of information. It's virtually inconceivable. And what it means is that you could store, you know, I talked on that program about, you know, God knows numbers the hairs on your head. He knows every time a sparrow falls from the sky, that God keeps track of all of our actions, our behaviors, our words, our thoughts, everything that happens on the planet, every sapling that grows, every weed that gets stomped on by a cow. He knows all of it. And now there's actually technologists who say we may have the ability to maintain that level of detail on the planet because the storage capacity to make it possible is now coming into existence. And what's fascinating about this new storage capacity using DNA is you're actually using just four letters. And so for anybody out there who's been trained in computer science or understands the way your computer keeps track of information, it does it using a binary system of zeros and ones. And so the more you combine those, it's exponential. So, you know, 2 to the 5th, to the 10th, to the 1,000th, you start getting into just inconceivably huge numbers. Well, the DNA system, rather than using zeros and ones, uses A, T, G, C, which are the four letters for the four amino acids that make up the DNA chains. And by the way, you can remember that because it's all things God created. So you get your A, G, T, C there.
Very good.
And that's really the encoding method or sort of the computer software, as it were, that God uses to create life. So if you've got a tree, if it's a willow tree, it's got its own sequence of those letters put together in just a huge, huge long string. And when you decode that information, you get a willow tree. Or if you do the same thing with a cat, you can decode the information in the genetic string of a cat and you get a cat. So now what they're finding is that because, I mean, think about everything that goes into making a cat. It's got to have fur and it has to have a nose and intestines, and it's mind-blowing what creates a cat. And yet all of that can be into a tiny microscopic speck of DNA, which contains every single last bit of code or information needed to create an actual living cat. So that gives you just a little small sense of the enormity of what we're now going to be able to store. And when you couple that with what the technologists and the biologists want to do, which is to begin uniting human beings with the databases, with the systems, so that there would either be an implant in you that would enable you to hear, would enable you to connect into the global brain, that it would be able to hear what you hear, see what you see. That's what Google Glasses are. So some way that you would be interacting in real time back and forth with a computer. And once you start coupling that with DNA, then the sky is the limit in terms of what you'd be able to do, because we're made out of DNA.
Exactly, exactly. But the thing that, when you first mentioned that on your program, and I'm thinking, and we are building this monstrous sized storage capacity in Utah for information. Why so large? If we can now collect that much information here, what are they planning to collect on all of the citizens of the United States, as well as where, why do they need to have it in the first place? But the fact that they have they are building a central location to store all of that information is extremely troubling and something that we need to start. It's the citizens. It's you people who are listening. It's people like Catherine, people like Phyllis Schlafly. These are people who said something's wrong. I'm looking at it. I'm just investigating it. And then eventually, because of your curiosity and your investigation techniques, you uncover a lot and then become the information source for a lot of different things. But you also make a difference in the world. So it behooves each of us to be interested in what's going on. And if this clicks with you, then you need to be contacting your legislators. You need to be talking about and finding out more about it. And where can they find more information about you, Catherine?
Well, you know, this is the kind of thing I talk about on my daily radio program. I do a daily show 4 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, and also Saturday mornings from 7 to 9. It's at kmashow.com. We're trying to get me back on the air here at WSMN here shortly, so we'll see if that happens. But that would be Saturday mornings or Sunday mornings, I believe. So we're working on that. But you can listen to the archives at my website, kmashow.com, or just my name, Catherine Albrecht. KMA are my initials, so KMA Show will get you there. And this is the kind of stuff that I talk about every day, really trying to make sense of the news. And it's happening at a mind-blowing pace, that these new introductions and technological breakthroughs are being made, with the new iPhone 5 out now with a fingerprint reader on it, which has big implications. We have the new Samsung watch, a wristwatch now, that they want to use, that would essentially be the equivalent to your cell phone. And the idea that your portable technology, your cell phone, your smartphone, your smartwatch, whatever it is, would have now a microphone that would always be on listening to you, that would be able to hear and see and experience all that you experience and record it all. I mean, these are crazy things. And when people hear about it initially 10 years ago, when I was talking about this, people said, oh, come on. I know you have a doctor from Harvard, but, what are you smoking when you, and nowadays, it's being shown that all of the things that were ideas 10 years ago are becoming a reality today.
Well, it's not been that, I mean, about a year ago, or maybe it's 2 years ago, that I realized that when you take a picture with your iPhone, that unless you go in physically and turn off the settings, in the settings, the location, they can, every picture that you take is ID'd exactly where it is that you are. And it's fascinating how accurate that kind of a situation can be. And in fact, the picture that I saw was showing actually someone sitting in a room. They could tell you not only where you were, but in what part of the house you were in. And that was extremely frightening. So people need to go in. But unless you are aware of it, unless we have a Dr. Catherine Albrecht who is telling us about these things, we don't go or even are aware of it. It's just, gee, this is a new neat feature on this phone, and we're taking pictures, but we don't realize that those pictures are being tracked everywhere we go.
It's almost as though, Karen, the technologies that are so whiz-bang cool that we're being given are booby-trapped. Because you say, wow, you know, this is not just a phone now, it's a camera. And so I don't need my film anymore, if anybody even remembers what that was. I don't need a separate device to take pictures. It's all in my phone. But what you don't realize is that by taking those pictures, as you just pointed out, you're providing anyone who sees those pictures up on Facebook, or if you post them on your website, or if you just share them through email, you're providing a precise link or a precise location data to within about 10 feet of where that picture was taken. So this is a real problem in the case of people who, for one reason or another, have to be extremely concerned about their security or their privacy. I would include in that group anyone with young children. If you're taking pictures of your kids playing in the swimming pool, and the exact location of that swimming pool is denoted right there in those photographs, you know, you could be inviting some unwanted attention. The other thing I think people need to think about when they're thinking about this location data is, you know, beyond just physical safety, what kind of a database is being created around this? You know, Facebook now has the largest database of human faces, and of course it's called Facebook, ever collected in the history of humanity anywhere on Earth. And what is scary about that is that Facebook now has acquired some facial recognition companies and technologies, and they have the ability to power all of the surveillance cameras in the banks and the stores and the streets and, you know, even in the satellites, to be able to identify all of the people of the earth. And I remember 15 years ago, a bunch of us were really upset because there was some new driver's license privacy bill passed on the federal level. And when we looked at the bill, it stripped away privacy. It's kind of like HIPAA. HIPAA, the Health Privacy Act, you think is giving you privacy, but it's really taking away your privacy if you read the fine print. When it went into effect, we were all horrified. So the same thing with driver's licenses. But what was so interesting was 15 years ago, before the explosion of iPhone use and cell phone use, and by the way, that's only been seven years since the iPhone even came out. So everybody staring and addicted to their phones is a very, very new phenomenon. There was no Facebook back then. And we were upset because the driver's licenses of the individual states were doing, talking about hanging on to your pictures and using them for facial recognition or even providing them for marketing purposes. And we wigged out because the only people who would have your face would be your state government, your DMV. And nowadays you look and we've got hundreds of pictures of every one of us all over the internet. So what you look at the transition, how gradual it is. When the government wanted to do it, we all protested 15 years ago. But now if they make it voluntary and fun, you do it yourself without the gun being put to your head and without the government screws being put to you. So it's very interesting watching the transition from the enforced privacy invasion by government to the voluntary, oh, it's just fun, let's all participate in this big social experiment version. And now what they're discovering is that that version is so much more powerful. How much better to have hundreds of pictures of you up on Facebook than one single scowling photo at the DMV?
Well, interesting, because when you go to the DMV in New Hampshire, you can have that picture expunged. However, it fascinates me too. You don't have to have your social security number on there, but you've got these receptionists at the DMV who are constantly saying, well, why wouldn't you want it? It's going to make it so much easier. If you lose your picture or whatever, you'll have to come back in. Well, what's wrong with coming back?
Yeah, I experienced that too. They really put a lot of pressure on you to not take that selection.
Exactly.
And, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing some legislation saying that they have to just zip their lip.
Yes, exactly. I agree. But it's interesting too, because I had someone approach me about voter ID. And this person was utilizing the camera and the fact that we have our computers nowadays, our laptops, are capable of taking pictures. Even our iPads are as well as the phone. And you can now collect all of this information on the phones with certain apps. You can. I wouldn't be surprised that at some point they'll be able to actually, when you go into the voting booth or when you show up at your town meetings. And this is a reason for people to really push for paper and pencil. but you'll be able to go into your county clerk and they'll just pick up their little iPhone and put in your name and they'll check you off as having voted. Well, this person was saying, why aren't they taking a picture of every person that comes in to vote? Because of the voter fraud that we had, 100,000 almost, new same-day registrations in the state where only 718,000 people vote is a lot of the percentage is extremely high. And therefore, the suspicion of voter fraud taking place was there. So this person was saying, well, why not take a picture of everybody that comes in and then you just match them up with their ballot, you know, kind of thing. And I'm thinking, wow, that's an idea that we wouldn't think about. But now you're saying the technology's there. It's perfectly easy. And you could even you could be voice recording them every time they came up.
You could even do on-the-fly DNA swabs of people as they walk in. We're almost to that point.
Yeah.
Whenever these kinds of discussions come up, it's always, you know, let's stop this crime. Let's stop this terrorist. Let's stop these identity thieves. Let's stop these voter fraudsters. And the thing that people don't realize is that there are brilliant security researchers who have come up with completely safe, secure, private, and anonymous ways to do all of those things. It is entirely possible to have a voting system that absolutely guaranteed that every person in it was authorized to vote without recording individually who they are and violating their privacy. So I would like to see the state of New Hampshire look into a system, and there are several proposed systems out there that would do this, and they're not any more expensive than what we're doing right now, that would not require me to go in and have my ID recorded or show my ID. And Karen, let me tell you why I'm a little bit concerned, because as a resident of the state of New Hampshire now for, my gosh, more than 10 years, and a voter in the state of New Hampshire, I don't show my ID at the polls. And I oppose the mandatory ID legislation. And let me tell you why. Because as a Christian, I'm concerned that we're going to get to a point where there will be some ID document that I, in good conscience, as a Christian, will not be able to participate in. And if that happens, I will lose my ability to participate in public life, or I will lose my ability to try to fight against such systems. So I'm referring, of course, if you read the last book of your Bible, in Revelation, it talks about the mark of the beast and, you know, a time when people will not be able to buy or sell or vote or participate in society unless they have a mark on their right hand or their forehead. And of course, 2,000 years ago, when the Apostle John first wrote this prophecy, it seemed kind of, you know, confusing to him. How in the world would you buy and sell with a number? How would you have a mark on your hand that could transmit a number that you could use to buy? It didn't make any sense. But now here we are, and not only is it conceivable, there's multiple ways you could even do that. In fact, the new Samsung Galaxy Watch is actually on your right hand. It's a watch with a number that you wirelessly transmit transmit, and you could hook it up so that that's part of your voting system. You take your RFID implant. If you go to my website at antichips.com, you can learn all about those. There actually is an implantable microchip, the same technology that's in your phone. You can stick it right in your right hand, boom. So what happens when the people who run the polls in the state of New Hampshire say, well, if you want to vote, that's fine. You just have to have that chip in your right hand. And I, at that point, will not be able to vote. So I believe that there are...